participants, members, we are continuing with our work of the electoral amendment bill and the interaction with the stakeholders that we have been interacting with. As we've noted that we are continuing with the deliberations, there were areas where members have referred for further consultation, in particular to technical issues that we may be advised on, and the legal areas where also we may be advised on, and the contributions of the stakeholders we have invited here to come and give their side of areas in terms of how the committee may need to look on some of the issues that may require legal advice and technical areas. We'll take those responses or presentations to the stakeholders. Members will comment on the areas that will have been presented on, and will take a pause and come back for deliberation in the next committee meeting that will be on Tuesday. And we have confirmed that we have requested the application to proceed with the deliberation during this recess, so that we are able to conclude this process at the level of the portfolio committee, and we're able to report to the National Assembly. That, as you know, that the parliament is in recess, but we'll continue with the work of the portfolio committee so that we make sure that all the areas that require our attention and require the attention of parliament are all exhausted for purpose of making sure that which we've been directed as a committee or the parliament to deal with, we are able to respond to that. I'm not going to take much time. This is our agenda as it has been highlighted. We'll get into the brief on the parliamentary legal service, just on the general issues that we've noted, and we perhaps have gone through the responses on the extension of the application that we sought as parliament. We'll then invite the content advisor to recap on the issues that we deliberated on and the issues that we refer for further consultation. And I must indicate that issues that we referred are in relation to legal areas and technical issues that the IEC may need to come in, including the method that we've been requesting the IEC to come and deal with the troop method. Then we'll receive as item five, those comments or responses presentation by the stakeholders and members will comment, and we'll then have the responses on the issues. Then we'll step off for further deliberation in our next committee meeting, as I've highlighted. We'll then come item seven on the adoption of the annual report, which was presented in our portfolio committee and referred to members to look at. And I think we've managed to deal with that and comment and adopt. And that will be a framework of our meeting today. I'll then invite Mr. Mathonsi to render apologies and introduction, if there's any introduction to be done. Mr. Mathonsi, thank you.
Hi, Chairperson. I've got only one apology from Ms. Kanyele. She's not in the meeting. Probably she'll join us in another meeting, not this kind of meeting. And then I don't have any introduction, Chairperson, except that now all the stakeholders that are here, we've been with them in the previous meetings. Thanks, Chairperson.
Thank you. That note and approve the apology. Is there any other apology, members? Noted. Any apology, Deputy Minister? Or Minister, I may not have noticed. I just only saw the DM. Minister, is there another apology?
Not that I'm aware of, Chair. Good morning. Let's ask the DG if there's any office.
DG, thank you, Minister, for attending, and the DM. DG, is there any apology?
No, good morning, Minister. Good morning, Deputy Minister and Chairperson and all the members. Also, the CEO of the IEC and Deputy Commissioner and Commissioners. There's no apology from our side. It's mainly Advocate Malakata and myself that have been attending the session. Thank you.
Thank you, DG. Commissioner La.
Morning, Chairperson. Morning, members. We have apologies from the judge who is in court today, and also Dr. Masuku will be joining us a little later. Administration team is led by the CEO, and he'll introduce it in due course. Thanks.
Okay, thank you very much. The state law advisor, is there an apology that we may need to note?
Morning, Chair. No, there's no apologies on our side.
Thank you. Parliamentary Legal Service, is there an apology that you need to note?
Chairperson, we all here, we have.
Thank you very much. Then we can, thanks very much for attending. We can then move to the item that is following, Mr. Matonzi.
Yes, the item following is the content advisor to recap on the last meeting. Adam?
Good morning. Yes, sorry, I saw that they had the agenda had the legal services first and then myself, but
I'm sorry, Adam. Yeah, it was my mistake. I think it's the Parliament Legal Service on the extension. I'm sorry.
Okay. So for that, colleagues, apologies. Let me invite the Parliamentary Legal Service to take us through on the outcome of the Constitutional Court extension. Thank you very much.
Good morning, Chairperson and honourable members and colleagues who are on the platform. Chairperson, I think briefly, we had made an application to the Constitutional Court, and I think in the last meeting, we gave a briefing indicating that there have been some interventions where some people wanted to join and oppose the application that we had made. And there was an application or a counter application to ours for a writ in as opposed to what we had applied for. The Constitutional Court, based on the papers that had been filed and the written submissions, has since issued an order that Parliament has been granted an extension. Our extension is until the 10th of December. In our affidavit, you will recall, Chairperson, we had made certain, shall we say, commitments in terms of how quickly we want to finish the process so that we allow the President an opportunity as well to consider the bill, and if there are comebacks from that consideration, that Parliament still has sufficient time to deal with those comebacks. That is the reason why we had asked for a full 6 months, which ends on the 10th. But the long and short of it, Chairperson, is that we have been granted our extension. The counter application was dismissed, and the application for Freedom Advocacy Network was turned down. So it is now up to Parliament to deal with the matter within the time frames that have been granted by the Constitutional Court. And I think, Chairperson, that's the long and short of it. I wouldn't want to say more on it because we don't know what is going to happen in the next coming months. Thank you very much, Chairperson.
Thank you very much, Mr. Njikela and the team. We may not comment on the brief, members. That it was the purpose of recording in our portfolio committee that summary brief. And as we've indicated in our application, I think all of us We are privy to the details of the application, and we have requested the parliamentary legal team just to brief the committee, as Mr. Njikela has accurately briefed. So we may not comment or take pose questions to the process. We'll now invite, thanks to Mr. Njikela on that brief and with the legal team. I'll now invite the content advisor, Mr. Salmon.
Thank you, Chairperson. Can I confirm that the document is on the screen?
Yes, you can put it.
Thank you, Chair. Yes, just to recap again, the clauses that are relevant to that need changes, I'll go through here. I captured in the last meeting the members' consensus on each of the bills that, or each of the clauses that needed changes. So the first of them is clause one, where there are two definitions. The one for region, three members of the committee suggested that the word region was clear enough, and only one member thought that more clarity was needed. On the party liaison committee, all the four members who commented indicated that party liaison committee should be redefined to include independent candidates. I'll then move on to clause four, where the next change occurred, which was relating to section 31A and 31B3, needing to be revised to bring independence in line with political party candidates in terms of not being required to be ordinary resident in the region in which they were registered to stand in an election. And three members were in favor of this. And two wanted further clarity on what the implications of independent candidates contesting several provinces would be. And then also in clause four, point four there, should there be signature requirements for independents as compared to none for political party candidates? A few members indicated that both independent candidates and party candidates should require signatures, and that this way was, and that the way this was done at the local government elections could work. Two members wanted further clarity on how the number of signatures would be calculated and how this would be done, how this was done elsewhere in the world. The fifth point, should there be a requirement for the determination of the number of signatures or the deposit needed for the independent candidates be left to the IEC to formulate in regulations, or should the formula be indicated in the bill itself? Two members felt that the formula should remain in the regulations, but two members wanted to know how this could be presented in the bill. Six, should the deposit for independent candidates be the same as parties, given that they only qualify for one seat? Three members felt that the deposit should be the same, and two felt that it should be more fair if the independent candidates had a lower deposit. Point seven on clause four. Should the requirement for 31B3F of not having been a member of a political party for 3 months prior to running as an independent candidate remain, be increased or reduced? Four members were in favor of the clause as it stands, and one member indicated that it may not be necessary, since the requirement of signatures would mean that last-minute candidates could not in any case stand. I'm just going to mute the noise. Clause 8, depending on the decision on point 5 above relating to deposits, the section on refunds may need to change. However, all members were in favor of deposits. All the members that contributed on indicated that deposits would still remain, given that deposits would still be required. So the next clause that will change is clause 11. Point nine there relating to the ratio of regional and compensatory seats to parties. Should it remain 50-50, that is 200 to 200 seats, or change to 75% 25%, or to allow independent candidates to run for all 400 seats? Three members were in favor of a 300 to 100 split of regional to compensatory, and one member in favor of the current 200-200, as in the bill. And one member wanted further clarity on what the implications of the different scenarios for smaller parties would be. Point 10 there, relating to constituencies, whether they should be increased to 66 or 200, as in the fund sales debit or Lakota bill. The four members that contributed felt that we should rather be at a later stage, given the time left prior to the next election to bring about these changes, given that the changes are quite significant. And then the in clause 11.5 to 8 relates to whether there should be three rounds or a single or two rounds or one round on the calculation of seats. Member wanted further clarity on how the single versus the three-round drooped formula would work, which is has been provided for by the IEC in their submission, which I will present to you later. Should clause 1116 be removed in favor of ensuring compliance prior to election rather than forfeiting seats if parties don't have enough candidates on their list after an election? Three members were in favor of this, that is removing the post requirement and rather have it as a pre-requirement. One member indicated the current model at local government elections works. Clause 16 and 25, should the IEC draft a proposal for the inclusion of three ballot system for the National Assembly compensatory, National Assembly regional and provincial legislature, either with the requirement of being ordinary resident or not. And three members were in favor of the three ballot system. Three members have commented. Clause 1134, how would it be responded to in court? The disadvantage of independents having their surplus votes discarded. All members were in favor of retaining the clause as it stands in terms of excess votes being discarded. Point 15 on clause 11, sub-clause 34, on whether there should be by-elections replacing independents. Four members were in favor of the next candidate in line filling the vacancy, irrespective of whether they were a party or independent candidate. And one member indicated that that this should be based on the initial election numbers and not a recalculation. Then this is currently not in the bill, but it relates to Chapter 5, Section 68 and 69 of the Electoral Act, needing to allow for independents to have agents during elections at voting stations. Members were in favor of this. There was general consensus. The committee wanted the IEC to clarify whether voting stations would be able to accommodate party agents and agents that would represent independent candidates. And that is a question of space, really. Also, just to indicate that this would require, in terms of NA rules, for the committee to apply to the NA, National Assembly, to to include additional sections of in the bill. They're not currently in the bill, so this would require additional permission from the House. And then just to follow on to that, I did a response in relation to the IEC's, just a further few points, a further document, which I'll just quickly share. There are 5 points in relation to the IEC's response to these two issues with the chairperson also asked me to go through. So the IEC indicated in its submission on point 27, which they were presenting now, that draft item 3.4 would this mean that clause 431A on independent candidates would be redrafted to be on par with clause 11.3.4 of the bill on political party candidates, which provides that the name of the same party candidate may appear on a list for one region and a national list of a party, but may not appear on more than one regional list. That is to say that the committee has to decide whether independent candidates will be allowed to run across regions, but not political parties, but then also be allowed to run at a national level, as is allowed with political parties. And then on point 29, the IEC proposes that the number of signatures required for establishment of an independent candidate be half a quota in the equivalent elections based on the previous election results. And the question is this only for independent parties or for political parties too? And is this irrespective of the deposit paid? And the question is, why is this so much higher than the 500 signatures required to establish a political party in terms of the regulation and registration of political parties? There also hasn't been indicated what the international best practice is for signature requirements around the world, and perhaps the IEC can reflect on that. And then the IEC didn't respond to the members who were in favor of the 300-100 split of regional to compensatory, but only to the one member who was in favor of the current 200-200 split. And the one member who was wanting further clarity on what the implication would be for smaller political parties, which would, in fact, it would be in their favor, based on the, particularly on the one round, counting system that IEC has proposed. And then point five, the IEC did not respond to the proposal that clause 11.16 should be removed in favor of ensuring compliance prior to elections rather than forfeiting seats if parties don't have enough candidates on their list after an election. So those are just the gaps that we identified in the presentation to be made by the IEC. I can raise this again, or I've shared this with members as well. Thank you. I'll stop there, Chairperson.
Thank you very much, Mr. Adams. We've worked on the recap issues. And I think we've realized that Mr. Adams has someone. Also indicated that two or three members in favor of this and that, and that does not constitute decisions of the process. Those were deliberations, so that I made the purpose of further presentation as we are awaiting for our stakeholders. Secondly, the issues that the last item that was raised circulated to members in terms of the other areas that the team may need to interact with. We'll now get into the third item, Mr. Matonzi, for stakeholders.
Yes, the third item, Chairperson, we're starting with the department on their presentation.
Yeah, we're also requested that because we're on the parliamentary live stream, we may need to switch on our videos. It's not necessarily compulsory, but where possible, all our speakers may need to appreciate the that request from the parliamentary media team or communication team. Thanks very much. If the next item is the DHA, if I'm correct, Mr. Matons?
Yes, Chairperson, is the DHA. It will be followed by Parliament Legal Service. It will be followed by the State Law Advisors, and then the last will be the IEC.
Yeah, the option that we thought it would be proper is that we may need to take the presentation and we interact with them if there are comments or members, rather than to get into one presentation, ask questions, because some of the issues presentations are related, or the responses. If that proposal fit well with you, or if you have any other proposal on how we must handle the four presentations that perhaps let me not be instructive. Let me just sought guidance from members. Can I invite Honorable Co-Chair, Bernard Merwe?
Chairperson, no, I'm happy with that proposal. Let's take all the submissions and then we can comment or ask questions afterwards. So we are happy with your proposal, Chairperson. Okay. Thank you.
Okay. Any second? Honorable Ross?
Yes, Chair, I second that. I think we have a holistic view at the end and then we can engage with that. So we receive all the
okay.
presentations.
Can I get a sense from okay. Honorable Mujisi?
I support the chairperson.
Okay. Thank you very much, members. I think we'll the collective thank you very much, Minister. Oh, yes, Minister, if there's issues from DHA.
No, thank you, Chair. No issues.
Oh, there's no presentation from DHA?
Oh, no. Can the DG take over? The DG is here. the issues. I thought maybe you were asking me about your proposal.
No.
Members were seconding. I'm sorry, I misunderstood.
No. So sorry. Yeah, you can proceed. Yeah. Thank you very much.
Yeah, I'm leaving it to the DG and Advocate Malaga.
Okay. Thank you, DG and Advocate Malaga.
No, thank you so much, Chairperson, and thank you to the Minister, the Deputy Minister. I hope the team will be able to fly the presentation. Are you able to fly the presentation for us?
Yes, the Chair can do that.
Are you winning, Muzi?
My apologies, DJ. I don't have the powers and the privileges to share the screen on this side.
Okay. Adam, are you able to assist, please?
I've made him a co-host, DJ, Muzi.
Oh, okay. Thank you. So, Honorable Minister, Honorable Deputy Minister will be responding to the 16 issues that were raised. The first one, the question was as to whether the definition of a region sufficiently clear as compared to a province. That was the first question that was posed. And our response as received from Council is that yes, the term region is synonymous with the provinces and that using different terms follows what currently is provided for in the Electoral Act. And the Council is of the view that this will enable that we do not confuse, as you'll recall, honorable members, the provincial to national seats in the National Assembly and the election for the provincial legislatures. So that's the first response to the first issue that's raised in terms of clause one. And the second question as to whether there's a need to redefine party liaison committees or liaison committees or electoral liaison committees along the inclusion of such in amendments to section 20, 62 and 64 of the Electoral Act, as well as related clauses in the Electoral Commission Act to allow for the inclusion of independent candidates in these consultative bodies. The advice that we have received from Council is that yes, the term can be changed as proposed in Section 1, Section 20, Section 62 and 64 of the Electoral Act, Section 5, 1G of the Electoral Commission Act. The view from Council is that this must be amended. as the commission, as the one that establishes party liaison committees under that provision in terms of the regulations. And then on clause 4, the question that was asked was whether should amendments to 31A and 31B, 3F be moved to bring independence in line with the political party candidates in terms of not being required to be ordinarily resident in the region in which they are registered to stand in an election. The advice that we've received from council is as follows. At the present moment, clause 2 currently provides that a party must provide the following with its list of candidates for national and provincial elections. Quote C states that the declaration signed by each candidate appearing on the party's national list of candidates or provincial list of candidates referred to in Schedule 1, confirming that he or she is registered to vote within the region or province in which the election takes place. Accordingly, party candidates contesting regional seats in the National Assembly or provincial legislatures effectively are also only entitled to contest one province or region, and brackets the advice that party candidates on national lists do not have the same requirement. So that's the advice that we've received. And then on 4, the question was on the signature requirements for independent candidates as compared to non-for party candidates. If we can move further down, Muzi. The legal advice that we received from council is that currently there's different calculus for party candidates and independent candidates, and therefore to register under the Electoral Commission Act, parties must satisfy certain eligibility requirements that do not apply to independent candidates. And then on 5, should the deposit for independent candidates in 31B, 3B be the same as parties, given that they only qualify for one seat? And the advice that we've received from council is that this is currently not provided for in the bill. And our view is that the mandated institution, in this case, the IEC, should be able to set a reasonable deposit for independent candidates. And this will likely be less than the deposit for political parties. That's the advice that we've received from council. On 6, should the requirement for the determination of a number of signatures required or the deposit needed for independent candidates be left to the IEC to formulate in regulations, or should the formula for the determination of signature requirements or deposit be included in the bill? In this instance, Council has expressed the view that the Commission, again, as an independent body, should be empowered to set this requirement, which may need to change depending, of course, on the population statistics in the various regions at various times, and whether the Commission should be responsible, therefore, and whether this should be set in the legislation. And the legal advice is that this is a policy question that we'll need to respond to. And then on 7, I suppose it's the same. Should the requirement in 31B3F of not having been a member of a political party for 3 months prior to the election, again, this is a policy question that the committee will need to respond to.
Prior to the election, again, this is a policy question that the committee will need to respond to.
There's someone who is on the something, Tichi. Sorry, I don't know who's that. Mr. Matonsi, can you just assist us so that there's no disturbance on the members who are presenting?
Thank you, Chairperson. Now on clause 8, the response from council indicated here is that depending on decisions on 0.5 above on deposit, the section on refund may have to change, and we have noted that. And then again, clause 11, should the clause 11.1 ratio of regional and compensatory seats to parties remain
50-50 split, or 200 to 200, or change to 75% to 25%, or to allow candidates to contest all 400 seats. Again, councillors advise that this is a policy question that will need to respond to. And then number 10, I think this was a reference to constituencies 60-200, as in the report, or the Likota bill. The advice that we receive from council is that a single member constituency system, as suggested in the Van Zyl-Slabbert report and the Likota proposals, reflects the maximalist approach, which the Ministerial Advisory Committee did not support. And that's the view from council as well. And then on 11, in clause 11.5-8 on regional seats, the question was whether should the three rounds remain the same or a single round according to the group system. I suppose this is a matter that the IEC will respond to. Again, the advice was that these are policy questions. And from our side, council is currently working on a memorandum to look at the IEC proposal. And then on 12, again, it's a similar policy question, whether should clause 11.16 be removed in favor of ensuring compliance to elections rather than forfeiting seats if parties don't have enough candidates on their list after an election. Again, council has indicated these are policy questions that we'll need to look at. They are currently working again on a memorandum to look at this question in particular. And the same with 13. Whether the IEC draft a proposal for inclusion in the bill of a three ballot system for National Assembly compensatory and also National Assembly regional and provincial legislatures, either with the requirement for being ordinarily resident in the region for all candidates or a removal of this requirement for all candidates. Again, the council has advised that these are policy questions and they will be working on a memo to discuss some of the proposals from the IEC. And then on 14, clause 1134, how would it be responded to in court to the objection that the major disadvantage of independents having their surplus votes discarded effectively means they have no choice but to run as parties, which then means the bill does not truly or fairly address the Constitutional Court ruling for the inclusion of independents in the National Assembly and the NCOP. Again, members, council has advised that these are very complex legal and constitutional, including policy questions, that they will require some time to consider and revert back to us. And then 11, if we can scroll up. Similarly, here on the by-elections for replacing independent candidates, and honourable members will recall that in one of the presentations we hinted around the cost implications and so on and so forth. So alternatively, the one proposal that was made was that should the votes be transferable as per the Likota bill, where independent having a list of running mates or independent with the next, or the independent candidate with the next highest number of votes in the initial election to fill the seat. I think again, these are complex issues that council has advised that they're working on a memo to address the alternative in terms of filling of seats vacated by independent candidates in both the National Assembly and provincial legislatures. Now, the last part is what's not included in the bill. This is 16, a proposal amendment to Chapter 15 on the Electoral Act is needed to allow for independents to have agents during elections. I think we have noted this, but obviously the IEC will then respond with regards to how practical it is. You'll recall, Chair, that some of the voting stations are quite small, and how will this be able to be implemented? That's the last response. Thank you so much, Chairperson. Back to you. Thank you.
Thank you very much, DG, Minister, for and your legal team for this responses as a result of the deliberations in our last committee meeting, we'll note that. Can I invite state law advisor? Is that the second stakeholder, Mr. Matonzi? Mr. Matonzi?
Yes, Chairperson, the second presenter is our parliamentary legal
okay.
service.
Okay, no, thank you. Mr. Njikela, thanks very much for, you can come in.
Thank you once again, Chairperson. Chairperson, having noted how the department has proceeded in terms of its replies to some of the issues that were raised, maybe I should say this right at the outset, that we have followed the same format in our document, following the issues that Mr. Salmon had raised in the last meeting. So it may appear to be quite a tedious exercise. But here, Chairperson, right at the beginning, we make the point that I don't know if Adam or Ed may be able to flight our document.
Okay, Eddie?
Right. Yes, okay. Let me try. I thought it's showing. Okay, let me try again.
But while he's doing that, Chairperson, we have identified what we consider to be legal or constitutional issues that we will need to respond to. And we do so briefly, taking into cognizance the fact that we had previously made an extensive submission to the committee. Chairperson, I'm not suggesting that the lines are bright between what is policy and law, because sometimes the two overlap. And I think that's the difficulty, which it has become apparent even in the department's presentation now. But we try to the extent that is possible for us to deal with what we consider to be legal issues. On clause one, Chair, I haven't seen the document on the screen yet.
Let me just a minute, Mr. Salmon, is there any challenge?
No, it was me, Chairperson. I'm not sure I'm able to see it from my side. Adam?
We can't see it, but you haven't distributed the legal service document to the rest of us yet.
Eddie, if you give me sharing rights, I don't mind flighting it for Mr. Njikela.
Is that Telana?
Yes, Eddie. Yeah.
Oh, okay, no, let me do that.
Sorry, Mr. Njikela, for the mishap.
It's all right, Chair.
Okay, you can share it now.
Okay, thank you.
Thank you, Chairperson. Starting with clause one, and given that we are all seemingly following the same approach, I will not go into details where we already agree with what the department has said. But the first question that was raised was the issue of the definition of a region vis-a-vis the province. The definition, as the department has already indicated, the definition of a region and the province seem to somehow coincide. And the primary concern that members had raised with regard to this issue was whether it's not creating confusion. And therefore, whether we should stick to one term as opposed to the other. And it will appear that the answer lies in the fact that the Act at the moment already uses region, which is supposed to be aligned with the regional seat. And it is agreed, Chair, that potentially this may create confusion.
to some, because we don't make laws for ourselves, we make laws for the public. So to the extent that there is a danger of a confusion, the committee may have to consider how it will deal with that. But for the purposes of definitions, a region is defined in the current bill as a territorial area of a province. And Chairperson, as you will know, Section 103 defines what provinces are, and it lists all the 9 provinces. So in as much as it is clear in legal terms, but we may have to consider if there is a possibility of us simplifying for an ordinary person. And I think that's where the concern was from the members. But Chairperson, we will take it no further than that, that it is an issue that must be considered. But if it is changed, there may be implications for other provisions of the Act that may have to be aligned with whatever change that the committee will propose at the end of the day. The next one, Chairperson, was the issue of the party liaison committee. And I think in the deliberations in the last meeting, there seems to be general consensus that party liaison committees, the nomenclature was based on the system that we are seeking to rectify at the moment, which is a system that was based on the party list. Now that there is general consensus and the Constitutional Court has made an order that independence must be accommodated in the system, it will appear that referring to party liaison committees may be excluding independent candidates. So we agree that there must be a consideration of using a different nomenclature to refer to the liaison committee. And there seems to be no legal difficulties with that. But we do raise in our issue, in our document, the issue of consequential amendments that may have to be done if we do change the name, because the Act already refers in various sections, and I think the department again touched on that. And we have in mind here Section 1, 20, 62, 64, and 100, and that will include the code to just make sure that there is consistency in the use of the word. On Clause 2, Chairperson, on whether Clause 2 requires those on the party's regional list to be registered to vote, but not ordinary residents. Now, this is the issue of residency, which again was discussed last week, whether it is fair.
Hello.
Who is that?
Adam?
Yeah,
Adam, mute yourself, Adam.
Let's try to respect presenters, colleagues. I think it's important. It's unfair to disrupt our presenters because we are not disrupted when we are on the platform. I just want to appeal to those that are acting aliens. Thank you. You can proceed.
So thank you very much, Professor. Clause 2 raises the issue of residence, Professor, like I was saying, that it's a question in our previous presentation we had explained as a policy issue. But we do highlight that there seems to be some form of differentiation between independent candidates and parties to the extent that the parties are not required to be resident. And we also indicate in our document that if you look at the system that is used at the municipal level, there seems to be no requirement for persons to be resident in the ward in which they want to contest. And we point this out, Chairperson, for the committee's consideration again, as to whether it is fair to have these different systems for these different entities, that is the independents and parties, and whether we should be considering using the system that is already used at the ward level, where all is required is that you must be nominated, or the nominator must be resident or registered to vote in a particular ward, not necessarily that the candidate must be resident. So that is a matter that the committee should consider. And I'm trying, Chairperson, not to read line by line, because the document we have seen that it is being circulated and most of the issues overlap between what the department is saying and we are saying. The next item, Chairperson, is your clause 3, which is an amendment of Section 28 of the Act, which provides for non-compliance with the submission of lists. We make no further point on that other than what we have already said in terms of the issue of residence. I just want to see if there is any point that we need to emphasize in that. I think it's already what I've covered here, that all the requirements in terms of local government is that the nominator of the independent candidate must be resident and registered, not the candidate himself or his family. The next issue, Chairperson, is the issue of signatures, which again the department has dealt with. In our previous submissions, we had indicated that there is nothing specifically unconstitutional about requiring candidates to have a certain number of signatures. And these we pointed out in our last briefing that there are already decided cases on that question. And we referred the committee to the case of the ACP and the case of the EFF with regard to issues of requirements or qualifications, as some people prefer to call it, that requirement on its own is not necessarily unconstitutional, because it is a requirement that is intended to sift the candidates, those who have a basis to contest based on the support that they have. So you need to have a system that separates what the Constitutional Court referred to as frivolous candidates from serious candidates who have a base or constituency in a particular community. So in that sense, there is no unconstitutionality that we can identify. But we need to bring the attention of the committee to another judgment, which is the Rechter judgment. Again, it's in our document, where the court makes a very important point that any electoral law that is being developed must aim to enfranchise rather than to unduly restrict the rights of citizens to vote and stand for elections. And we think this is an important point that comes out even from the New Nation judgment, which has resulted in this process, that the attempts that we make in passing new laws should be intended to create more platform rather than to restrict the platform. So that comes to the issue of whether independent candidates require the same number of signatures or same deposit as political party. And in our previous presentation, we had raised the issue that it could be that an independent candidate may not have the same financial muscle that a political party, because a political party has members. And in most instances, parties that are already registered and have participated in elections are getting funding from government. Because you are introducing a new law now, independent candidates may not immediately have that kind of financial muscle. And this is the issue that the committee has to consider, if imposing the same requirements will be seen as discouraging an independent candidate, or should the committee consider creating different dispensation for independent candidates vis-a-vis political parties? And of course, this issue was discussed in the last meeting, Chairperson, and some views were expressed that given the fact that all of the entities are competing for seats in parliament and that there is a possibility of a refund, whether it shouldn't be the same. I think the point that one may want to make in this respect is whether if potentially a political party has a possibility of occupying more than one seat, while an independent candidate is limited to one seat. So these may be these peculiarities around a development of a legislation that intends to accommodate both the independent candidates and the political parties. And there are differences which are practical between the parties and independents. So I think the system that we create should be intended to accommodate both parties and independents in a manner that could be seen to be fair. And we consider it to be outside our expertise to prescribe, and I'm hoping that the IEC will deal with the issue in their response more in detail than we can as legal advisors. The next issue, Chairperson, again, is the issue of deposits and signatures, which I've already dealt with both, that there is nothing necessarily unconstitutional, subject to the questions of fairness that one may want to consider in terms of what are the possible ways of encouraging or of being seen to be encouraging and opening the space for independent candidates, given the different financial muscles that each may have compared to a party. But again, Chairperson, we make the point that these remain largely policy issues and the committee needs to consider and make a decision on that. The next question was the cooling off period, which the department has already dealt with and has indicated that they may come back on it based on the issue of advice they get from their council. But in our view, we're simply saying this is a policy issue. The department needs to develop a policy position and advise the committee. Why is it necessary? And why is it important that there should be a cooling off period? But I don't think as parliamentary legal services, we're in a position to take it further than that. It is a policy issue. The next one, Chairperson, is clause 8. Depending on the decision, and again, the department has dealt with the issue, on the issue of deposits and signatures and the issue of refunds. In our view, this clause will only need to change if an independent candidate is not required to pay a deposit. Otherwise, the deposit should be returned if the IC, that is the independent candidate, is allocated one seat, similarly to what would happen in the case of a party. But of course, Chairperson, I go back to the point we made earlier, that what seems to be the big issue is whether we're opening equal access between independent candidates and parties to contest elections. Not so much that there is a possibility of a refund, because if I can't raise the money for instance, to stand, it means I'm already excluded, while a party may have better capacity to raise the money. So it's not so much about the issue of refund, but it's a matter of whether we're opening access to independent candidates in a similar way as the parties. The next one, Chairperson, that we speak to is clause 11 on the issue of compensatory seats. It is a highly policy-centric issue, which we do not believe that it requires us to respond, but we do express a view in 9.1 that a policy decision had been taken to lead to have a split of 200 regional and 200 compensatory seats. The justification for this can only be obtained from the department, and I'm hoping that the department will be able to do so at some point. The Constitution does not provide an independent candidate with the right to be included in the compensatory seat. And we have already had a discussion, Chairperson, around the difficulty of compensatory seats for independent candidates. Because as an independent, you can only occupy one seat at a time. So these are the practical differences that we have to deal with. And then a view has already been expressed in the past deliberations that there may be other things that could be done to facilitate this issue of accommodating independent candidates within the existing electoral system. But whether all of this can be done within the context of the current bill or is something that as a country we should be considering going forward beyond just complying with the Constitutional Court order that has a deadline now. So for that reason, Chairperson, and for practical reasons which I've already alluded to, the issue of the right to compensatory seats is a bit of a problematic issue now. The next issue, Chairperson, was the issue of reference to constituencies as referred to in the Van Zylsdijk report. And again, Chairperson, we make the point that in our view, it is a purely a policy issue. And we were hoping that the department, in their presentation, they will sufficiently deal with that. The same, Chairperson, applies to the group system, which is the next one on point 11. We make the point that Item 8 of Clause 11 of the bill illustrates that the two-quarter system is only used as round three in the allocation of votes for regional seats. Considering that the group system is used to establish proportionality, what is the justification for using the two-quarter only in round three? Then again, Chairperson, we are not in a position to provide definitive answers because this is a policy issue, which we had hoped that between the IEC and the department, they may be able to assist. Of course, the IEC still has to speak on the issue. I'm hoping that they will be able to provide. The next one, Chairperson, is the issue of forfeit of seats in our paragraph 12. If parties don't have enough candidates on their list after an election. This exact section was contained in the previous Schedule 1 of the Electoral Act under Section 7.1. But perhaps the department or the IEC may provide input on this. It is not a matter that is within our specific expertise. The next one, Chairperson, again, we defer to the IEC to respond to the issue that is our paragraph 13. In paragraph 14, we deal with the question of how would it be responded in court to the objection that the major disadvantage of independents having their surplus votes effectively means they have no choice but to run as parties, which then means the bill does not truly or fairly give them an opportunity to participate. Chairperson, in our first presentation to the committee, we had raised the practical difficulties that come with being independent. We understand the case that was made before the Constitutional Court in the New Nation Movement to be this, that I have a right to stand for election as an independent. The issue of voluntary associations has been raised, and our understanding is that the very issue of association goes against what was sought before the Constitutional Court and granted by that court. This is the difficulty that we run into where we have to provide for this issue of surplus votes. But we are hoping, Chairperson, that perhaps the IEC may deal with the issue of how do they deal with the formula to allocate seats to parties. If, for instance, a party requires 50,000 votes to secure a seat, what happens if it gets 55,000? What happens to that 5,000? But that's a matter that we believe that is within the expertise of the IEC in terms of how the seats are allocated. But it will appear that it's not something in our view that will be unique to independent candidates. There will always be an excess vote that may have to be discarded because you can't have half a person. But more importantly, again, is the issue that you can only occupy a seat at a time. The next issue we speak to, Chairperson, is the issue again of where there is a vacancy that is created either because somebody has passed away or has resigned. The bill at the moment proposes that that seat should be only filled in the next coming election. Now the question is, and more especially bearing in mind the point we had made earlier, that an electoral system must be designed in a way that will enfranchise people. If people have voted for a candidate and that candidate, for whatever reason, is no longer able to fulfill that function, is it fair and constitutional to keep that seat vacant for the remainder of the term? Or should there be a system that will ensure that the seat is filled based on the will of the people? Because the principle is the issue of one man, one vote, and each vote must count equally. There has been practical issues that have been raised in terms of how cumbersome it may be for the electoral system to have to fill a seat by means of a by-election every now and then when an independent candidate is no longer able. But again, Chairperson, we defer to the department in as far as that issue is concerned. Chairperson, the department has already dealt with the issue of the last issue in paragraph 16, which is not part of the bill, but we make just some brief comments on it, that the department and IEC members have agreed that independent candidates also be allowed to appoint agents. This is no different issue from the issue of party liaison committees, which we discussed earlier on. That now that the scope is being broadened, it seems to be fair for independent candidates as well to be given space to have agents during the elections. So the issue is no different from the principle we have already enunciated when we dealt with the party liaison committee. Chairperson, those are the brief comments. I hope the document can be circulated for members to fully consider it. And that is the end, Chairperson. Maybe through you, if my colleagues would like to expand on any of the issues, that you through you, Chair, you allow them the space to do so. Thank you very much, Chair.
Thank you, Mr. Njikela. I will do so before we invite the state law advisor to make comments. You will advise me who want to comment, or they will opt to comment when members have made their they've impressed on the presentation. But let me take your route to invite your team.
Thank you, Chairperson.
Thank you.
For the opportunity to present, it will be myself, Soraya Williams, and Sara Govender. Okay. A lot has been covered by Can everybody hear me? Okay. A lot has been covered by what the
Sorry. Just pardon me. Just to interrupt you. It's not my take. I wanted to check with the Mr. Njikela if your team, as you have requested, will comment later. Do I understand that is the Suresh from State Law Advisor?
Yes, Stephen, it doesn't seem like the team would like to add anything at this moment.
Okay.
But maybe if there are deliberations, they can make input.
Okay. No. Thanks very much, Ms. Williams, for an apology for disrupting you. We can proceed.
Thank you, Chair. A lot of what we want to say has already been covered and articulated by the Parliamentary Law Advisors as well as the Department. We won't go into detail as to what has already been discussed. But other than to say that when we looked at these issues, we looked at it through the Constitution because the starting point for any evaluation is the Constitution, and we looked at it through Section 19 of the Constitution. But without repeating as to what was already articulated by the Department and the Parliamentary Law Advisors, We also had the opportunity to consider the subsequent submission by the IEC. And for the purpose of drafting and legal certainty, there's just certain things which I want to highlight, which I hope that the IEC will be able to respond to and provide some clarity. With regard to the definition of region and province in the bill, either or, we don't see anything unconstitutional about it. But what we noted that in the IC submission, they proposed a wording for region. They proposed that that region be given a more descriptive word, and they proposed that it be referred to as multi-member regional constituencies. And we note that they proposed the changes made to item 25 in Schedule 1A to the Electoral Act. But in other places, they still refer to region. For example, in the proposed item 25.2 still uses region. So basically, the point we want to make is that we'd like clarity on if they intend to use substitute wherever the word or expression region is used with multi-member regional constituencies. We propose that it be substituted throughout the bill, rather than to be used interchangeably, because this will help to create legal certainty. And also whether the intention of region, we note that region is, as the Parliamentary Law Advisor also pointed out, region is defined in the schedule to the Act, and we've included a definition in the bill. And if the same definition in the bill is to be used for the schedule as well, the ALIS will obviously take care of that and delete that expression region. But clarity is sought by the IC with regard to whether the expression region will be substituted with multi-member regional constituencies throughout. Okay. And then the next thing we raise with regard to party liaison committees, the Parliamentary Legal Services and the Department dealt extensively with this one, and we share the views expressed by them. However, we'd again like to request clarity from the IC in respect of their proposal. They proposed the substitution of the definition of party liaison committee with political liaison committee, which means a committee established in terms of the regulations on party liaison committees established in terms of the Electoral Act. We know that the regulations on party liaison committees published under Government Gazette number R824 on the 19th of June 1998
which are specifically to political parties, by substituting the definition of political liaison committee in the bill says to include independent candidates, it must ensure that the amendment is consistent with the intention of including the application of liaison committees to independent candidates, and that it must cater for independent candidates. So we're saying it's not merely a name change, but substantively it must be able to accommodate the independent candidates. Yeah, and also the IC is also advised that it may choose to repeal the existing regulations or to enact new regulations that include, that provide for independent candidates. Okay. The next matter relates to, the next matter was discussed extensively as well, and we concur with our learned colleagues on the views previously expressed in respect of the nomination of independent candidates. We noted that the IC has made a proposal that independent candidates may be nominated for more than one region for the National Assembly or Provincial Legislature, but may be elected only one seat to the National Assembly or the Provincial Legislature. While this remains a policy decision, a concern that arises is that should this amendment be effected by the IC, then it would be necessary to consider the Clause 2 of the bill, which amends Section 27(2)(CA). And requires a political candidate to show they are registered within the region or the province in which the election will take place may need to be omitted, as requirements will no longer apply to independent candidates. Okay. Those are basically the other issues that we wish to add to the submissions that were made, but a lot was covered in the submissions, which was eloquently presented by the Parliamentary Law Advisor and by the Department. Okay. Thank you, Chair.
Hi, Chairperson. Chairperson?
Yes, yes, Mr. Matonzi.
Okay, all right. They are done.
Oh, okay. No, thank you very much for the presentation. We'll now go to the invite the IEC to present. And it's becoming clearer that there are more issues that are referred to the IEC. We'll have a way to deal with that just after members have made comments in terms of how we're going to process the issues that the legal service have raised in DHA and the state law advisors. I'm just cautioning that there may be some of the issues that are related to the IEC. That they may not have paid more attention to break committee. But I'll leave that to the IEC. IEC, Commissioner Love, you'll introduce the team and then you'll take us through. Thank you.
Thanks very much, Chairperson. And, you know, as you've said, there are some additional issues, for example, those that have been put on the table by Mr. Njikela that, you know, were not raised with us, that we can and that might come from other members of the committee. Honourable members might raise these in questions, and of course we will respond to those. To the extent that we took away notes from our previous engagement with the committee, the CEO and his team will deal with these, and in particular, the CEO will deal with the issues of questions that, for example, were referred to by Mr. Njikela about the number of ballots, issues like the droop and the hair quota, how do they work, and giving more understanding and detail, hopefully, to the honourable members, but also in that context, issues to do with votes that are received by any candidate over and above the quota, how these are dealt with, will also be addressed. I think that the one issue that Eddie raised at the end of his presentation, which two issues that he raised, the one was in relation to the whether or not the compensatory vote should be 200 or 100. I think in the submission that we made before to the honourable members, and again the CEO will deal with it, we emphasised, as has been said, it is a policy decision. But of course, as part of that policy decision, if there are 300 seats that are available, both for political parties and independents, I mean, I think that that it then is clear that there are more seats available. When the members of parliament, and in Eddie's introduction, he seemed to be asking, would this result in more independent candidates coming in? It would certainly give additional potential opportunity to independent candidates, but obviously it would be the electorate that would have the final decision. A last issue just in relation to the question of multi-member regional constituencies. I think the CEO will deal with this. The issue that we were raising was really in relation to the second ballot process. It was not a sweeping change to the terminology of region, but it was to enable us to understand how the regional seat for within a province can be very clearly distinguished from the regional seat that will come into the compensatory voting system. But if the members feel that it will be better to change the terminology right through of region, obviously that then is something that the honourable members will deliberate on. So with those introductory remarks, Chairperson, I'd like to hand over to the CEO. I hope that he has sharing rights, because he has a presentation that he will be giving, including in relation to the quotas. Thank you.
Thank you, Commissioner Lass, for the remarks. CEO, Mr. Mamabolo. Mr. Mamabolo.
Oh, thank you. Sorry. Am I audible now?
Yes. Thank you.
Thank you. Thank you very much, Chairperson. First of all, let me thank you, Chairperson, for the opportunity, and also thank the Minister and the Deputy Minister, Vice Chair, Ms. Love, and members of the Commission, and my colleagues in the Executive, Ndate Shiburi, Ndate Mahlangu, Ndate Mosri, Rekaras, and so on. I think we must locate the role of the IEC in the evolving process correctly. That the interest of the IEC is purely to offer advice to the committee, but also to look at the practical implications of the choices that are considered in the portfolio committee. Meaning the IEC would maintain a position that does not engage policy choices, but rather offer advice on the practical manifestation of choice of those policy choices if they are made or when they are made. Now, in terms of the substance of the presentation, is in two parts. Firstly, the committee had requested us to specifically deal with differences between Drupal and her culture systems. So we'll do that. After which, we will then address the drafting issues on the proposals that we had made. Our understanding of our task was offer us precise drafting proposals to support the proposition you had made in relation to a number of practical issues at the previous engagement with the committee. So that's the essence of what we're going to be dealing with. Of course, the questions that have been raised this morning, we do have answers in the presentation to some of them, but others are coming on the table for us for the first time. And we may not be able to deal with them here and now. That said, Chair, if we look at the definitions between the two quota systems. The definition of Drupal is that the total valid vote cast in a particular election for a particular constituency, and you divide that by the number of available seats in that legislative assembly. You add one, then the result plus one is the quota, is the Drupal quota that you use. So it's total valid votes cast in a constituency divided by the number of seats available in that legislative assembly or council or whatever, and the result to that, you add a one to it and you disregard fractions. And then you have what we call a Drupal quota. Now, the definition of hair, almost very similar, but with one important distinction. It's total valid votes divided by the number of seats. The result plus one, disregarding fraction, is the hair quota. Now, what is the difference? In Drupal, you add a one on the divisor. In hair, you don't. And just that one distinction has important implications for the distribution and application of these two quota systems. So as an example, if you have in an election, 2.4 million votes cast, and you have in that legislative assembly 25 seats. If you apply Drupal, the Drupal quota system, the result would be 92,322. And when you apply HER, your quota is 96,015.
Sorry, Mr. Mamabolo. You pardon me to disrupt you. If you can move the slides, we're still on slide one.
On my side, Chair, yeah. I'm on slide. Number two, can you see slide two?
Unless it's my system, Mr. Matonzi, is my side or is all of us?
No, Chair, it's Adam here. I think if we can just stop share and share again, it seems like it's stuck. It's stuck.
Yeah, it's stuck on the
side. All our screens are not moving, Chair.
Okay, yeah, I think, sorry, Mr. Mama, we'll have to disrupt you. I just for the benefit of all of us, if you can have a minute for you to just work it out.
Can you see it now, Chair?
Yeah, the first slide. Can you go to second one and see if
the difficulty is that on my side it is moving, but
can we, Mr. Salmon, Mr. Eddie? Yes, yes, yeah.
Okay, do you have it now?
Yeah, thanks.
Okay, no, sorry about that. My apologies.
No, noted.
Yeah, perhaps this bears a need for me to repeat this in terms, I was saying the definition of proof is that you take total valid votes cast in a particular election for a particular legislative assembly. You divide that by the number of available seats in that legislative assembly, and you add a one. The result that you derive from that, you add another one, but disregard fractions. And the quota that results is the true quota. Now, in contradistinction to her, total valid votes divided by the number of available seats, the result plus one disregarding fractions is the quota. So in here, you don't add a one to the divisor, whereas in group, you add a one to the divisor. The divisor is the bottom number when you do a division. So if you take an example, total valid votes for in an election is 2.4 million. And in that legislative assembly, there are 25 seats. Applying those numbers to the droop formula, you result with 92,322 on droop. Whereas on her system, using the same numbers, the result is 96,015. Now you can already see from those figures that on her you need more votes to get one seat than you do on group. So the implication of that is that group facilitates inclusivity to the extent that the quota is lower than it is on her. Then let's just go into the actual calculation using a group. Here's an example using group. Party A, party 1 until party 10, with all votes cast, giving you 2.4 million. When you take that quota of 92,000 and divide the actual valid votes for each party, the result is that for party 1, 0.1, for party 2, 15.1, and so on and so on. Based on that, you do the first allocation. So party 2 gets 15 seats, party 5 gets 3, party 6 gets 1, party 8 gets 4, and so on. But you'll see that you've only allocated 23 out of the 25 seats. So you go to your highest remainders. You look at your highest remainders and you rank them. The highest remainder here is in party 9 at 83, followed by party 6 at 2. Then the last two seats are then awarded to those two parties to make a final allocation of 25. So group already 23 seats are allocated at the first instance, and the last two are allocated on highest using the highest remainder system. Now, in the same figures, if you use the HAIR system, this is the this is the result. And remember, the droop quota we said is 96,000, and on droop is 92,000. So in the first allocation on hair, you're distributing 22 seats, whereas on droop, you distributed 23, which means using the highest remainder methodology for the surplus seats, you now have to distribute 3 additional seats, whereas using droop, you only needed to distribute 2. So with droop, you distribute, the quota is low, and therefore you distribute more at the first allocation, which means the people going into the legislature on first allocation, they have the total number of votes required to buy one seat. Because on the remainders, you are no longer working on the total quota, but you're working on highest remainder. So people who didn't get the quota would benefit more because of the highest remainders. So hence, the commission's proposal to use droop is beneficial for inclusivity, also for, because the quota is lower than it is in here. So Chair, I think I'll leave this here for now and go into our document, if that is acceptable.
Are you done with the presentation?
No, Chair. I was done with the...
Oh, okay. The formula. Okay, yes. Okay.
Yeah. I now need to go into the the document. I'll be with you in a minute, Chair. Eddie, can you try to zoom that document for us? I'm struggling to locate it on my share screen.
Are you able to see it?
No, it's frozen.
Is it frozen?
Mm.
Okay.
Yeah, let's scroll down. That's the introductory part, Chair, which we won't deal with. We'll go to just go up a little bit. Hold it there. Yes. Number B, Chair. I'm skipping the introduction. I think members of the committee can look at that at their leisure. In terms of accommodation of independent candidates in political liaison committees, we acknowledge that the current Act provides for party liaison committee at the national and provincial level, and only parties may be members. But obviously, we're working to include independent candidates. Therefore, there's a need to reformulate the nomenclature. Our proposition is to drop reference to party and to refer to these committees as political liaison committee. And there are practical considerations to that proposition. There is a lot of both as subsidiary legislation as well as policy documents which have reference to PLC. And for convenience, practical convenience, it is best to stay with the acronym PLC, even when the substance of those committees will change. Now, the Electoral Commission Act provides that the Commission must prescribe a system for political liaison. That's what the Electoral Commission Act says. So we will be in a position to revise the regulations on party liaison committees to make them regulations on political liaison committees to take into account the participation of independent candidates. So we accept that there will also be amendments required to Section 1, 20, 62, and 64 of the Electoral Act, and we offer the drafting formulation in respect of those provisions. So you can go down. I won't deal with the legal drafting issues, Chair. I'll limit the input to the principles at play. So you can go down. Yeah, go down further. Yeah, just hold it there. So there at a point, paragraph 14, as I indicated, the proposed amendments will have to be accompanied by a suitable amendment to the regulations on party liaison committee. Those regulations are within the preserve of the Commission, and the Commission will then address that issue to include independent candidates in the composition of the political liaison committee. We can move ahead. I'm not going to deal with the legal drafting issue there. Okay, just hold it. Then number C, Chair, we deal with the issue of party agents. Obviously, we can no longer use the terminology party agents, since there will be independents as well. Our proposition is to refer to this category of stakeholders in the electoral process as agents. We already do so, in fact, in the local government context, local government election context, where party agents are in fact called agents, because in the context of local government elections, they are independent, as you know, for the ward election. And if this is, if the committee accepts this proposition, then there will be consequential amendments to Section 58 and 59 of the Principal Act. We've noted both what the Parliamentary Legal Service and the State Law Advisor says, that in terms of the rules of the National Assembly, permission would have to be sought from the House itself to deal with these two amendments to this two sections. That's the matter that is within the realm of yourselves. let's move on to the next theme. Eligibility of independent clients to contest more than one election. Yes, thanks. Chair, the principle is that the elections to the National Assembly is one, the nation is one national territorial entity, is one legislative body. So you have to be in a position to contest it from anywhere, as it were, because it's about the nation or the one national territory. So it's whether you are a party, a candidate, or an independent candidate, you should be in a position to contest it from any regional constituency, so to speak. But this is different from a province, and perhaps in the manner in which we provided for this in the document, it requires a little bit of revision. A province is a subnational constituency, and therefore only people who are the electorate in that subnational entity should be able to participate in that election. So although the region and the province have the same territorial composition, but one is for a national election, which is about the whole national constituency, and the other has a sub-national territorial composition. And therefore, for you to be eligible to contest a provincial election, whether you are independent or party, you have to be registered on the provincial segment of that province. So let's go down. So we do provide for a drafting proposal in that regard, save for the rider that I say. For regional elections, you may contest from anywhere. However, if you win a seat, multiple seats, you take the seat where you have the most votes. For purposes of provincial elections, you may only contest in the province in which you are ordinarily resident. It's the same in local government, that you contest in the municipality in which you are ordinarily resident. You can't influence the political, the provincial politics of a province in which you are not a resident. So that principle that we articulate there in paragraph 27 is that this principle must apply to both the nomination of independent candidates as it must to the nomination of party candidates, so that you maintain a parity of treatment between those two kinds of candidates in your electoral environment. We can go on to the next topic, electoral deposits. Yeah, let's put it there. The current scheme is that the quantum of electoral deposits for different categories of contestants are prescribed by the commission by way of regulation. The commission proposes that we retain that arrangement, that ahead of the election, it will run a process, a public participation process with a proposal on what is the deposit for a provincial legislature for national election, what would apply in respect of independent candidates for provincial and whatever. And having had and solicited public opinion and expert opinion, then make a determination. It is important that we realize that the determination may be different from one election to the next. And therefore, we need to avoid the temptation of setting that figures in the quantum in the Act and allow that to change from one election to the next, given economic factors and other political dynamics. These are deposits and not fees. And therefore, they will be returned to the participants if they secure a seat in the relevant election. If you, after the election, you secure a seat, you will be refunded the deposit. If you are unable to secure a seat, the money is then forfeited to the revenue service. Now, in the event the portfolio committee approves the use of supporting signatures, then it is proposed that the quantum of signatures be linked to the quota of the previous election in an equivalent election type, so that there's an objective mechanism offsetting the requirements of the signatures. Now, the percentage is not so much an important thing. The principle is the key thing here, that link it to something that is objective, and that is link it to the quota that was set in the previous election of an equivalent election type. That's really the principle that we wish to propose to the committee. Now, the number of ballots. Let's go a little up again. Thanks. The first ballot, or perhaps I must start by saying the following. The commission proceeded on the understanding that there already a policy choice was made in relation to the distribution of the 400 seats in the National Assembly. Hence, what our input here is predicated on that understanding that a policy choice was, or at least a policy proposal is on the table, and that proposal is 200 regional seats and 200 compensate receipts. We did not understand the request of the committee to have been to reflect on the suitability or desirability of that policy proposition. Now, we therefore propose that we introduce a third ballot. So you have two ballots, one for the compensatory seats, and the compensatory ballot will be common throughout the national territory. So at all the 23,000 voting stations, that ballot will be the same. The second ballot is for the regional elections, because those, if you think about it, are unique elections in themselves. And a second ballot brings out that reality quite clearly, that it's a regional election. We're electing regional representatives into the National Assembly. Therefore, it offers the voter greater choice, to say at the national level, this is my choice. At the regional level, this is my choice, a choice that could include independent candidates. So it follows, therefore, that the second ballot would be unique from region to region, because different players may contest different regional elections into the National Assembly. So that's the second ballot. The third ballot is the current provincial ballot. Again, it stands to reason that that ballot would be unique in each of the nine provinces. We go a little down. Yeah, just hold. Oh, no. Yeah, that's fine. Now, the first issue that of the issues that the department and the Parliamentary Legal Service and State Law Advisor dealing with is the issue of whether we retain the language of reason of region, or whether we use another reference to regions. We are placing for consideration before the portfolio committee the change of nomenclature to say let's call the regions as we have them. We understand regions for simplicity, it's clear and so on, but as reference was made here today, when we legislation is not for legislatures, it's for the public. Now, giving this a more descriptive nomenclature would help with trying to secure maximum clarity in the public. So we propose that we call them, it's an option that could be considered by the committee to say, let's call them for what they really are, because these regions are in fact multi-member regional constituencies. They're multi-member in that you don't elect one person in those constituencies. You elect several number of people distributed between provinces and totaling 200. So they are multi-member in that sense, and they are regionally based, and they are in fact 9 regional constituencies of the country. So it's a more descriptive reference you give to them that we want to offer for on the table for consideration. The question came, and I think quite correctly, if the committee accepts the use of this language, the MMRC, then you know, your item 1 throughout the document would have to accordingly change to match the rest of Schedule 1A. So if you accept it, then you've got to do it throughout for in Schedule 1A, so that you don't call them regions in one item and call them an MMRC in another. If that then is acceptable, item 25 of Schedule 1 in the bill would then have to be redrafted in a manner proposed in paragraph 31. I think we can go to the next theme. Thanks. Now here is the issue of which quota system do you apply. The current bill proposes for the regional elections a three-part methodology. Our proposition was that use group, include everybody in one calculation, and in terms of the unallocated seats, retain for regional regional constituencies, retain the highest remainder methodology. Use group for the reasons that we've indicated in the examples that I provided earlier, and use one calculation and the highest remainder system. Now, the point, and really this perhaps is a repetition, is that it's a more inclusive way. It's more, it will result in a more inclusive legislative assembly because the quota is smaller and it allocates more seats in the first allocation, which means your result is more proportional. You know, you can never have a perfect proportionality because as soon as you go to highest remainders, you begin to award seats on less than the full quota. If you allocate more on the first allocation, it means your house is more proportional. So that's really the key component, and we are providing in the document the precise legal drafting to support that that proposition. Can we go down? Yeah, go down. Yeah, then the allocation of compensatory seats. The principle of the proposition we're making is that when you calculate the number of, rather the quota for the compensatory seats. Although you are going to distribute 200 seats, but you have to work out of the 400 and then subtract what parties have already gained in the regional seats. In that way, you avoid distortions to your proportionality. If you do it purely on 200, you are losing your ability to restore proportionality, and you probably are going to fall foul of Section 46, which impels us to get as close as possible to proportionality. So really, the issue regarding the allocation of compensatory seats, it's a calculation methodology that tries to achieve or to get us as close as is possible to a proportional outcome, meaning the proportion of votes equal to the proportion of seats. So we propose to work out of the 400 seats minus the seats already gained in the region, the regional elections. I think we can leave that one at that, and we are providing a drafting proposal in that regard. Let's go further down. Okay. The provincial seats, again, we propose the use of group for the reasons that we've outlined and for consistency between what we do in the national election and what we do in the provincial election. And we provide them a drafting proposition to accord with that principle of using a troop. So there is nothing more controversial, so to speak, so far as provincial seats are concerned. You can go to the next item. Okay. Issue is the filling of vacancies in respect of independent candidates. We propose that in filling the vacancies, a recalculation would have to be made at a point where a vacancy arises. That recalculation of the quota at that point will exclude the votes for the person who caused the vacancy and exclude the votes of the independents who already hold a seat, and a new quota for purposes of filling of a vacancy would have to be done, which means there are certain practicalities that the Secretary of the Legislature would have to inform the Chief Electoral Officer, and then for that calculation to happen, and for a report to the back to the Secretary of Parliament as to who the next person is in terms of the process. So essentially, the principle that we are proposing, you use the votes of the parent election, and in that way you retain the will of the people insofar as it relates to that election. you don't discard the results of the, or rather the votes cast in the parent election. You use them to recalculate the quota, excluding the votes of the person who caused the vacancy, as well as the votes of independent candidates who already hold a seat in the relevant legislature. So really, the Israel is a way of determining who is second best in terms of the votes expressed in the parent election. Again, offering a drafting proposition to support that. Let's go to the next. Chair, I think in respect of the issues that we understood to be the ask of the committee, we've tried to address them in this document. There are additional issues that appear to have emerged from the discussions that we've had earlier. But this is the, as we understood it, you had a need to be provided with drafting proposals to support the propositions we're making in the various areas, and we've done so in the document. If there are other additional issues that emerge, depending of the on the nature of questions that you may wish to pose, we may be able to deal with them here and now, or the Commission may have to retreat to go consider them carefully and revert. Chair, with your leave, I'm not sure if my colleagues would want to supplement maybe one or two points, and I'll turn to us in Dr. Shibori, and then I'll through you, Chair, you can allow him to make a point or two.
Thank you, Mr. Mamabolo. I think we can, if there's additional points to be emphasized, Mr. Shibori can come in.
Thanks, Chair and CEO. Just to underscore one point, and we will resubmit a new document that has this new detail. I see AD is flighting an older version of the document. In the draft notes, what we're proposing to arrive at parity in the manner that we treat candidates, whether independent or candidates standing on party list, is the following: that we permit both candidates to contest multiple regions. However, we restrict them as it relates to the provincial legislature election to a province in which they are registered. That is true for both independents as well as for candidates who appear on party list. And if that is acceptable, we will then propose a redrafting that gives effect to this in respect of party candidates, because the bill as it currently stands, it allows candidate to contest, however it places a restriction on independent candidates to be contestants in a province where they are ordinary residents, when there is no requirement for party agents other than just in the submission of documents as in the current draft in section 27. That's the one point I need to make to you. Thank you.
Thank you. Okay.
Okay, I just wanted to say that's all there. Thank you very much.
All right. Thank you, colleagues, for
IEC and the state law advisor. What we'll do, we'll allow members to comment and perhaps raise some of the issues. And I take note that there were issues which were raised earlier on by the, in particular, the DHA and the Parliamentary Legal Service that were referred to the IEC. And to some extent, the presentation do respond to those issues, though other issues may need to be further be processed by the IEC. We'll then just receive a written note on some of the issues so that we consider in our deliberation. And I think this process assisted to further give more deliberation at the level of the committee on the issues that were raised. That's a necessary process that we're engaging on. I know that the perhaps the minister or the DM may be tempted to tap into comments on some of the issues that are raised by the IEC or the legal team. I will give them that opportunity if they do so. And I'll allow members to comment and raise questions for purpose of more deliberations on all the issues that are being raised in our next meeting. At least members will be given opportunity to go through on these issues. And we must re-emphasize that we know as the committee that these are not new issues that were presented. The presentations that were earlier presented by yourself, in particular legal team, IEC and DHA, in responses from parliament, public hearings, you are taking from that point of the and the deliberations that are being raised. So I think that point need to be re-emphasized, that it's a continuous reflection on the issues that are arising on the deliberation that we're engaging on. I will then allow members to make comments and questions. I will start with the Honorable Hwase, Honorable Rose, Honorable Mlekwa, Honorable Pillay, Honorable Van der Merwe. I got an apology from Honorable Modise. She will indicate if she's back. And Mr. Matunzi, you'll alert me if there are other members who are on the platform who may need to comment, who are not necessarily from the committee, but they're joining the meeting. So that more empowered contributions. In that order, Honorable Hwase.
Thank you very much, Chair, and my apologies for not switching the video on. I'm experiencing a problem with my network. Chair, let me start by greeting all on the platform and really appreciate the presenters for having given us a lot of information on what we seek clarity on. But Chair, sitting here, previously we've been waiting for IEC specifically to bring more clarity to issues that we previously raised in the portfolio committee meetings. But Chair, where I'm sitting, I had questions, but after the presentation of the IEC, I honestly see a need for us to have a whole day engagement with the IEC, because sitting here looking at the presentation that they've just done, asking questions and leave it at there will not be doing justice to the presentations. Because also for us to reach to a point of concluding the work that we are expected to do, we honestly need to have clarity and more information So, Chair, I will not be asking any questions at this moment, but I'm going to request that, especially that some of the information we just got now, we as a committee members be given a chance to go and thoroughly engage with these documents. And at least, if possible, let's have, I don't know if I should say, let's have a physical meeting, or let's say let's have a whole day engagement, even if it can be virtually, with the IEC, so that we can talk on issues that they've been raising, and for us to have a full presentation and ask questions and comments. Honestly, it's not doing justice. We must engage each other even when the issues arise, Chair. So where I'm sitting, that's my proposal. Thank you very much.
Honorable Ruos.
Yeah, thank you, Chair, and thank you to all the presenters for the considered inputs that have really added tremendous value to this process. I think we're still looking for the IEC's advice on the signature processing. I know it was mentioned in response to the clause about the 3 months. Candidates that were in a political party and now that want to stand as an independent needed to make that change not within 3 months before the election. The issue that we raised there is how long it would take to process the signatures for the signature requirement, especially if you're considering a 30 or 40,000 signature requirement, that somebody at the IEC is going to have to do that. And I think it's important that we do receive that input in terms of the practicality of this. How would the IEC process those signatures and verify them? And how long would it take? On the proposal of multi-member regional constituencies, my one concern here is that it could lead to confusion down the line, because we've said at this point in time, we've agreed that to try and split up the country into constituencies, there isn't time for that before the next election, but that needs to be urgently considered after the next national election. So if you had to change region, if my understanding is correct, if we are changing region to a multi-member regional constituency, and then you introduce constituencies, to my mind, that could then create confusion again. So it will come to the point again where you will have a separate constituency entity and a separate region entity. Then in terms of the political liaison committee, I think it's a very good idea, especially when we make these changes. You know, it has a knock-on effect to all sorts of documentation, et cetera, that would refer to PLCs, that if you make a change to that, it could affect that. So very happy with the idea of a political liaison committee. Then in terms of item 14 that Adam Salmon raised, it mentioned there that we all agreed. I certainly don't remember agreeing to that. I think we agreed to the one seat per independent candidate, but not that surplus votes be discarded. And I'll explain why this is important later on, Chairperson. So we are here to satisfy the Concord judgment to facilitate independent candidate participation and to do so in a way that retains general proportionality. And I think we've really found each other on most issues. Point number one, I certainly agree that with the IEC proposal that we allow independent candidates to stand in multiple regions, provided they meet the requirements in each region. Because Chairperson, you know, we it's difficult to compare an independent candidate to a candidate standing in a party, because at the end of the day, the party is able to stand in all provinces. And the independent, if you compare the independent to an individual in a party, it's not the individual in a party that's standing, it's the party that's standing. So I do agree that that the independent should be able to contest in each region. And then obviously, you know, there should be, you know, the requirement that is proposed in terms of the provincial legislature also makes sense. It would be difficult to have a representative in the provincial legislature of Gauteng that lives in the Western Cape, for example. But Chairperson, a key issue really is general proportionality. And we've seen the explanation of hair versus droop. But the elephant in the room, Chair, is that if independent candidates are not considered for the PR seats, then this is a killer blow, because whatever you do in terms of hair or droop in the regions, your general proportionality will be skewed. Because at the end of the day, you will have a different quota of votes for political parties for those 200 seats, and you will have a different proportionality or seat threshold required for an independent candidate. As a chairperson, you know, if we're agreeing that independents should be able to stand in all the regions, then I don't see a reason why those votes cannot be added together. And if they don't get a seat in one of the regions, then the combined seats be considered for a PR seat. Because chairperson, I can promise you, with the mathematics, it doesn't work out. You will not get general proportionality if independent candidates are not considered for PR seats. So the seat allocation system, we're agonizing over it. And it's something in the public participation that even the chair of the team that the MAC report came from, MAC Maharaj, questioned this. And he said that nobody had proposed this system, and it's not used anywhere else in the world. So we're choking on this complex system. But really, all that we require is minor adjustments to the existing system. So the existing system has three stages. The first stage is you work out your national proportionality on one threshold. Everybody, all the parties have one threshold that they are judged against. Then you go and work out the regional seats. There in each region, it will have its different threshold. You work out the number of seats that the candidate's got. And then in the last round, you come back and then you see what the difference is, how many seats the party's got in the different regions. And then those seats are topped up according to the proportionality calculation in step one. So the chairperson, if you make the adaptation that an independent candidate gets one seat at maximum, and that the national group allocation, which is currently limited to five seats, is removed, then you get the effect that people are asking for. Because what will essentially happen is, if you are not dropping the votes of independent candidates, you will have certain parties that get their vote in terms of their proportionality, and then the rest of the votes that get topped up by remainders, the more extra seats that the independent has that made it, the more smaller parties will pick up those seats once you do a proportion calculation. So at the end of the day, you might have an independent that got many, many votes and got one seat. But if you do not discard those votes, if you keep those votes, it means that the political parties get seats according to their proportion. And then when you do the remainder allocation, those seats are more than likely going to go to independent candidates or perhaps smaller parties. And so certainly, chairperson, it's, you know, the current system with two minor adjustments is absolutely going to resolve a lot of the issues that we face at this point in time. And then really what it also does, by allowing independents to be considered for the PR list or the proportional list, is that entire list can then be considered when you need to replace an independent candidate should one become incapacitated or pass away. The challenge that we have with Section 42 of the IEC's inputs in terms of a recalculation is that under certain circumstances, this can result in somebody that's already in suddenly not having enough seats to make the cut. So there are potentially unintended consequences that can happen. If you discard votes of somebody that made it in, specifically if they had a large number of votes, it can skew things in unexpected ways. And so really, by making two simple adjustments to the existing seat allocation system, you would in effect come up with a proportional remainder system, which could essentially give you a list. And then from that list, you can fill up independent candidate vacancies. Then, chairperson, we've requested the timetable from the IEC. I think in in terms of the fact that we have been given an extension until December, I think it's very important to receive that, that updated timetable that the IEC provided to us at the very beginning of this process, where they just looked at the general legislative requirements and the timeframes that are involved, and then also the timeframes that they require to then prepare for the election. I think it's important for the general public, Chairperson, that everybody is comfortable that we are on track and that we also can measure against that timetable. How are we doing? Are we getting close to certain deadlines, et cetera, et cetera? That's all the input from me, Chairperson. Thank you.
Thank you very much, Honorable Mulekwa.
Thank you very much, Chairperson. I don't want to waste time. I'm covered. Thank you.
Thank you, Honorable Pile.
Thank you very much, Chairperson. Let me first thank all our presenters and the stakeholders that have presented this morning. I think for me, this helps the process a lot because I'm just going to request you to switch off my video, Chair. For me, this helps the process a lot because it gives us clear understanding, explanations, and being able to then chart a way forward. But the only challenge I have is that there was quite a lot of information for one to absorb this morning. And while I've heard you say earlier that this is nothing new, but when you listen to the presentations coming from IEC and Parliamentary Legal Services, it makes you start looking at things a bit differently in comparison to what we may have been discussing and hearing. And I think it makes a lot of sense now. So for me, I think we have approached it correctly to say that we would have enough and sufficient time to be able to discuss, deliberate, and then when we come in at our next meeting, we'll be able to make inputs. But yeah, I think there's one thing for me that stands out. It's about the regional / provincial terminology. My understanding from what was presented today is that we're actually calling a province a region, one. Two is that the current reference of constituency is actually speaking to a provincial legislature, whether it's in the demarcations of provinces, even through the different formulas that are being used, because what you do is you take the number of seats in that legislature and the number of votes cast within that province. So I'm just trying to understand why it won't be easier and much more feasible to then refer to provinces and legislatures the way you would refer to it as a province or as a legislature. And then the other thing is, in terms of constituency, if we are speaking, and from the presentations I gather that we are referring to, and perhaps maybe there should be a question of clarity on whether it is referring to a constituency currently is a legislature, then it avoids the confusion that Honorable Ruiz has mentioned, which I think makes logical sense, because it may confuse people when you refer to constituency. Because sometimes you would refer to constituency as a smaller block rather than an entire a legislature or province. The other thing that I want to be able to, I think there are other issues that I would obviously be able to zoom into as we go on. But the one particular one that I want to raise, Chair, is this methodology that is being used in terms of the highest remainder. I think it talks about the maximum of 5 seats to that effect. And perhaps we need to look at that specifically. And my proposal would be that we actually use, we stop that highest remainder methodology. And we should actually look at going straight into the average votes per seat instead of going to highest remainder methodology. We should actually go into the average votes per seat. For me, that will become a fair process. Then in response of what loosely is termed as surplus or wasted, and I don't think there's anything wasted, but surplus votes is not a new concept. And I think we must understand and accept that. In every election, whether it's provincial elections, national, whether it's local government, there will be what is referred to as surplus, because once the formula that is used for that election allocates seats, the remainder of those seats become surplus because it doesn't meet the quota or the threshold for another seat. And it means that you then become a surplus vote. And this happens to political parties. So there's no difference when it then happens to independents. And I think we must be fair to the process that it does exist and it's already happening. And I'm sure that it perhaps even happens in all countries. It's not just in South Africa. But also, I think, Chair, there are some technical things that we might have to ask the relevant and pertinent questions to in respect of IEC, in respect of even what DHA has been saying. And I'll be better prepared after having looked at it. I also would like to request that presentations that we've not yet received, if we can be able to receive that, so that we are able to then really unpack it. And for me, Chair, I think we need to start cross-referencing the different submissions so that we are able to understand it better and look at what the different stakeholders or role players are saying so that we can be able to deliberate and reach finality. And before I end, Chair, I want to also say that what is going to be important for us as a committee, and I said this before, is not the fact that we have to rush or meet a deadline, but the fact that we have to get every clause constitutionally correct, legally correct, and also one that is going to be justified but fair in terms of citizens of this country. And when we do this, Chair, we must also take into cognizance the fact that we cannot disadvantage existing political parties or even the smaller parties just because we are accommodating independent candidates. I think it's going to be very important and crucial that we must be able to level the playing fields, but be able to give a process that is fair to everyone and a process that makes perfect sense in terms of a political stability within the country. So for me, I want to say that we will have time to be able to deliberate on it. The presentation should be sent to us. But also, I raised the one specific one that I zoomed into, and that is in terms of the methodology. My submission, Chair, would be that we consider using the average votes per seat and not the highest remainder methodology. Thank you.
Thank you very much, Honorable Van der Merwe.
Yeah, thank you very much, Chairperson. I have been largely covered by my colleagues, but I think first off to say thank you very much to everyone for the very valuable presentations. I only received one of the presentations, so I'm hoping that I will get the rest in due course. And yes, Chairperson, these might not be new issues that we are dealing with, but I think I want to reaffirm what we said in the previous meeting, Chairperson, and that is that the task before us is to create inclusivity, to create fairness, parity, to create an environment, Chairperson, where we make sure that we level the playing field, as the Honourable Pillay just said, and ensure that there's a conducive and enabling environment for independent candidates to be able to fairly stand in elections. And I think we are getting to a point where on many of the issues. We are understanding each other and we're on the same page. So I think also I would agree with the fact that we should allow independent candidates to stand in all regions, but then for them to take up a seat in the legislature if they are elected to the legislature in the province where they come from or reside. It is the practice with political parties as well. I agree that we should change the party liaison terminology to political liaison committee. I think that's a sensible agreement or proposal. On the issue of deposits, for example, Chairperson, I think I agree with the CEO's approach that it should be determined per election, considering factors, for example, such as the, you know, circumstances in the country, whether economic or otherwise. I think I support also the proposal of the IEC in terms of how we should fill vacancies. Of course, the droop method, as has been explained to us in great detail, encourages far greater inclusivity, although I think some of the matters that Honourable Ruiz raised in terms of filling or seat calculations, we will have to consider as a committee. Chairperson, yeah, on the issue of deposits and signatures, I still maintain the view, as I've said many times before, that I think it will be completely unfair to expect an independent candidate to pay the same deposits or garner the same amount of signatures as political parties. And it has been touched on by the IEC as well as the various other presentations. But I think we need to get to a point where we come to an understanding about what a fair formula would be. And therefore, I think we do need to get greater guidance from the IEC in terms of international best practice. For example, you know, if a political party is expected to pay, like I've said before, if they're expected to pay 100,000 Rand deposit and they're fielding 100 candidates, are we then saying that an independent candidate will, for example, pay 1,000 Rand deposit? And also, what is fair in terms of signatures for an independent candidate? Is it 500? Because I think, you know, we need to get to a point where we start to look at some of these issues in more detail. Because I really think it would be, we need to ensure that we do not make it impossible for independent candidates to stand in this election. But otherwise, Chairperson, I think we will go into greater detail in our next discussions about some of these issues. But I think we're getting to a point where there's great clarity in terms of some of the issues that we've been grappling with. Thank you very much, Chairperson.
Thank you very much. I'm not sure if Honorable Mutise is back. I'm advised that Honorable Jacobs want to make a comment. Honorable Jacobs? Okay. Is there any other matter, Minister, Deputy Minister, you would want to impress on before we invite back the team? Minister?
Thank you very much, Chair. Just two issues. As I'm listening to members, I become convinced about the proposal made by Honorable Lowassa that perhaps the committee, together with the presenters, might need a one-day workshop where you don't only listen to input and response, but you engage, continuous engagement, question, answer, debate, etc., so that we come nearer each other. As we did, you may remember that at the beginning of this whole process, we were called to present the Department of Home Affairs document to all political parties, where it was really some form of a workshop. I will really ask for that. The second thing I want to make is, I thought every time we meet, Chairperson, there are things at least on which we agree, and they must be ticked and we go on. I'm speaking here under correction because I thought I picked up something from the parliamentary legal office about the issue of replacing an independent candidate when they are no more or when they have left parliament, about the fact that we spoke about expenses and all that. I thought that matter was resolved because while the initial document of Home Affairs was saying there's going to be no replacement, after engagement with the IEC, they came with a proposal, which we all accepted, that yes, there will be replacement, but it won't be in the form of a by-election, but it will be in a form of recalculations and all that. I thought that was ticked off, and there's no debate about that because nobody else is challenging it. But I really still believe this issue of workshop is needed, Comrade Chair. Thank you very much.
Comments, DM, if you have anything?
No, I've been covered, Chair. Thank you.
Thank you. Let me establish if there's any response, or not response per se, but comments as members have been raising. Let's park this one of the workshop. We'll deal with it when we close.
Chairperson, it's Faiz Jacobs. May I come in, please?
Oh, sorry. Honorable Jacobs, yes, call you earlier on. Honorable Jacobs?
Yes, thank you. Thank you, Chair, and thank you to the committee. I think for me, this has been an invaluable experience just to observe and to listen and to commend the team, especially this portfolio committee and all the presenters, and dealing with such a difficult and delicate topic. So I've learned, I've observed, and I just want to commend the team and say thank you.
Thank you very much. Let me start with the Parliamentary Legal Service, if there are issues to respond, State Law Advisor. I assume the Minister spoken, it may not DHA and the IEC. Then we'll establish or just ascertain some of the issues that are in our table for deliberations. Mr. Njigela? Daksha?
Hi, Chairperson, it's Talana. Mr. Njigela has indicated that there's nothing further to respond to as committee members have forwarded no questions towards what we presented. So there's nothing further to add.
Okay, thank you. State Law Advisor, Ms. Williams?
Thank you, Chair. At this stage, we have nothing to add, Chair.
Okay, thank you. DG and Mr. Malikan, if there's any other matter.
No, Chair, I am covered from my side.
Okay. Commissioner Love, and you will then delegate to the CEO. If there's a matter you want to comment on.
Thank you, Chairperson, and thanks to the honourable members. I think that as you've already indicated, but also the ministers emphasised, this proposal by the honourable member Lekhwase in terms of a one-day workshop, we would be very open to that, and we're in your hands in that regard. In terms of some of the additional items that we've been asked to give feedback on, such as an updated timetable and so on, and also the request by the Honourable Van der Merwe for us to make proposals in terms of the differentiation or the idea of a differentiation in relation to signature and deposit requirements. I mean, these are things that we can take back to discuss. But I think that some of the issues that have been asked for example, exactly how long signature processing for candidates would take. I think the issue here is it's an example of something that would require certainly a system development, which in itself takes time. And so in that regard, it might not be possible for us. If we had no system, it would clearly be a very manual process and probably quite unworkable. So, Chair, I'd like to just invite Commissioner Moyepsa to see if he has anything to add, and then the CEO may want to respond now or at a later stage to some of the other questions. Commissioner Moyepsa?
I do not have anything to add, Chairperson. Thank you very much, and good morning to you and the team. Thank you.
Through you then, Chair, if I could just hand over to the CEO.
Yes, just can proceed. Morning, Commissioner Mieta.
Okay, thanks to Chairperson of the meeting and Vice Chair of the Commission. Clearly, there are a number of issues that can benefit from the proposition of a possibly a fiscal workshop where we go through these issues. Some of the points that are the table will require that we get into a little bit more detail, and therefore hence our support for the proposed workshop. I don't think we can achieve a lot trying to explain them here and now. We rather defer them to that engagement, which we hope the committee can do in the not too distant future. Thanks, Chairperson, and thanks, Vice Chair.
No, thanks very much. Honorable attending to this matter. Note the process of interacting with this electoral amendment bill. And I've cautioned earlier on that is a continuous responses of public hearings and the deliberation. And these are as a result of our own contributions and clarity that we sought. The commission and the legal service and the DHA came back to the to the committee, and they were careful in terms of the policy choices. They were not attempting to get into that space. So it gives us as the committee members to further deliberate on the issues that we have started to engage on. Earlier on, in terms of the recapping of our presentation and deliberation, I have indicated that differences which were articulated by members, and I make reference to Mr. Salmon, who indicated that two or three members may have agreed or differed on this matter or in favor of the subject and that are arising in terms of the amendment. It gives an opportunity advices in terms of the issues that we're raising today. And I think we must appreciate the stakeholders sufficiently. We've provided clarity on all the issues that we forwarded to the members in terms of this new or the updated responses to that effect, and will give opportunity to members to interface with that. The proposal that was on the table may not be immediate. We to continue to deliberate on the issues that are before us, so that workshop if we will consider it, may not start discussion afresh. Members must be able to deliberate on the issues, and we isolate key issues that will need further consideration as a proposal for or physical or deliberation with the IEC, as on technical issues that the committee may need further discussion on that. So we'll continue with the deliberations and then isolate issues, because that workshop may need to just refine some of the issues that the committee may need a proper or a sufficient clarity on some of the key issues as the commissions have raised. We're noting that matter, Honorable Khwase and the minister, but it must not be established as the all matters must be referred to the workshop with the IEC. We'll continue with the deliberations as a schedule, and I'm observing that the IEC is already to engage on the A-list in terms of amendment that may need to come in into the to electoral bill. That will formulate our summary in terms of the process that will be engaging on the deliberations, and later on that consideration for the workshop with members and all the isolated issues that we may have considered as the committee. I think that will be sufficient for processing this we've been raising and the comments that we'll be raising. The last point is that Minister, we were careful. The committee, and I think you are persuaded that the decisions that were taken, there's understanding in terms of the areas where members may have consensus on, and this recapping and noting both ourselves and the content advisor in the meetings, that demonstrate that the possible consensus reaffirm those consensus, because there's a different views. And I think this presentation, which we are continuously receiving, as Honorable Pillay raises, give new thoughts on some of the issues. So we may not necessarily at this point come to the committee and say this, we have decision on this matter, this on this matter, but we've managed to, if you have attended the last committee meeting, to deal with some of the items that the committee may need to formulate a consensus on. And I want to appreciate that members do note and appreciate the input that has been presented, and will give new thought in reference to the deliberation that we're continuously engaging on. IEC, I think we note extensively the methods that you have articulated, and in detail clarified some of the issues and empowered on the areas where members were concerned. The principle which Honorable Van der Merwe has raised in terms of the finance, that is the standing articulation informed by the reports that was presented by the task team, and also expressed by the electoral amendment bill. And all of us, I think, will take that counsel that we need to have a fair in terms of directive that the Constitutional Court has directed the committee to deal with, and formulate, continue the process of the deliberations. We'll then take this in the manner that we've been framing the deliberation content advisor, and in our next meeting next week, we'll continue the deliberation. Is there, can I check with honorable members so that we move to our next item? Honorable Ross?
No, Chair, I'm fine.
Honorable Pillay.
No, thank you very much, Chair.
Honorable Van der Merwe.
No, Chairperson, we are happy with your summary. Thank you, Chair. And also to, just to support the proposal for a workshop. Thank you.
Thank you, Honorable Khase.
I am okay. Thank you, Chairperson.
Honorable Lekwa. Okay. Now I will invite Honorable we get into the next item. Mr. Salman?
Yeah, thank you, Chairperson. Sorry, you cut out there for a second. Yeah, just to indicate on our current draft program, we have another meeting scheduled for Friday. So you just mentioned the next meeting was going to be next Tuesday. So I just wanted to know if we're still going to continue with that Friday meeting for deliberation.
No. Oh, okay, noted that point. I think I was... I note that the supposed to be meeting that matter in the Menco that was put in our introduction and also our summary that the next committee meeting will be next week and will give more time to members to deal with this presentation that has been presented, and I think you're right to just alert in terms of the previous schedule. So our meeting will be next week, Mr. Salman. Is that clarify you?
Yeah. Yes. Thanks, Chair. And thank you, Chair. Okay. I switched off your video because you keep cutting out. Just for the time being, I know we're being recorded. It's just we're having difficulty hearing you.
No, noted. We're struggling with network, Mr. Salmon. I think that's the matter that we're sitting with and we can't avoid it. Thanks very much, Minister. Thanks, Commissioner Love and the commissioners, the CEO and the executive team, Parliamentary Legal Service, and the state law advisors and the DHA, the DG and the legal team. Thanks very much for your presentation. We'll step off this item. We're now going to the next last item, Mr. Matonzi.
Chairperson, it will be me dealing with that one. It's the issue of the annual business plan.
Yes, thanks very much. You can proceed.
Thank you. Chairperson, just indicates we, based on the members' input in the last meeting, we said we would wait for any additional responses from the members. We received no additional responses, and all the issues that were raised in the last meeting by the members, we've endeavored to include this as part of the third term program. So for instance, having a workshop, full day workshop with the DHA on all the outstanding issues being made part of the third term program. So the annual business plan remains largely the same. Again, it's just an overview type document. And we've got the outstanding recommendations there from our budget reports and our annual performance plan review of the entities. So the plan has remained largely the same, and we've just endeavored to include the members' recommendations as part of the committee program. So all that's left for us to do is just to adopt the report, and then we'll endeavor to include all these things as part of our program. Thank you, Chair.
No, thank you very much. Mr. Salmon, this report was presented, members, if you recall, in our last committee meeting. We dealt with some of the issues. We requested members to comment in the framework of the presentation. We do present this for your consideration adoption as a working, and you know that we've singled out that we'll have a physical meeting in terms of the program next term, late November, September or November, to meet with the Department of Home Affairs to deal with some of the key issues that we're collectively with the department working on since the sixth parliament. As you know that the term of office ends possibly next year, and we had to begin to highlight the legacy report. But progress and the weaknesses that we've identified, and that this is a consensus or the resolve we've agreed on. Can I get members to note the report for adoption? Any other matter?
Yes. And then noted, Chair. Noted.
Honorable Pile?
I'm saying that it's noted, Chair.
Okay. Noted, Honorable Khwase?
Yes, Chair, noted and adopted as a working document.
Honorable Ruas?
Yes, Chairperson. Seconded or heard it from our side.
I can hear you.
I said it's seconded or thirded from our side.
Okay, thank you. Honorable Van der Merwe. Any other opposing view? If there's any other opposing view? Okay. So we have, it was proposed for adoption, then seconded to adopt this report. Adam, are you noting that?
No, the chairperson, yes.
Yeah. Thanks, members, for adopting this report. Mr. Matonzi, is there any other item?
Chairperson, there's no other item with that.
Okay. Thanks, members. If there's no any other matter you want to raise, and I must appreciate that you have taken time during this recess to continue with the work of Parliament, in particular to the matter that is before us. We have received brief on the extension. We must work so that we are able to allow the NCOP also to deal with this amendment bill. Again, we thank the department, IEC, parliamentary legal in particular, to continue with this electoral amendment bill deliberations. The meeting until next meeting will be communicated by the secretary, which will be next week. Thanks very much. The meeting stand adjourned.
Thank you, Chair.
Thank you, Chair.
Bye-bye.
I get you by phone now, Chair.